Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is episode 73 of the Van Hemlock Podcast, part of the Virgin Worlds Collective.
Everybody,
you stop doing the Dr. Nick thing.
Hello, we're back with another What We've Been Playing show.
Indeed, yes, it's been a while, been a fortnight. What have we been playing?
And your horrible revelation.
Yes.
Should we start with my games?
Oh, do you want to go first this
yes.
time? Oh gosh,
because then I can sleep during yours.
Right, fair
really
enough.
Late night last night. Ah, right. What have I played this week?
I know you were there.
First of all, I wrote notes. Getting to that point, I have to write it down in a book. I hit 80 million skill points in Eve.
Well, congratulations. How many skill points has the most skill pointiest person in Eve got?
Ooh.
As a reference?
It was over 100
over
last
100,
time
isn't
I heard, but it was a while ago.
120?
Something like that.
Yeah. So, what does that do for you in-game? What can you do that a brand new player can't?
Fly loads and loads of ships.
So you've basically been continuously subscribed for what? How long taken you to get there?
I haven't been continually subscribed, but more subscribed than not over the last five years.
Yeah.
But I've been around since launch, so.
And the sort of thing that a brand new player starting now will not be able to catch up with you, as long as you continue to keep
playing.
No, but
they'll still be able to blow me up.
They'll still be able to kill you quite easily, I'd imagine, yes. Given the lack of actual space flight experience you have.
I can't remember.
Did you undock?
No.
Or were you just skill training?
I'm just skill training.
Right.
I'm really not on a high for Eve. I probably will be when the expansion comes.
Yeah, when all these new bits and pieces. I want to see the new planets, so I think I may dip in for that.
Mm, yeah. So, proper games I played, properly.
Yes.
I played a bit of Fable 2.
Fable 2?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yes, mainly because I realised I hadn't finished the expansions.
Right.
Shocking.
All that DLC extras that you haven't finished with.
So I played through those, and then I decided, I might as well try and get 100% achievement.
And did you?
Not yet.
So you're basically at the filling in the corners
and
looking for the bits you missed stage for Fable.
Yes, as it usually goes with me, I start filling in the achievements and realising, I could have done that. Mm. That would have made it a lot easier.
So the basic gameplay there, you're still enjoying it? I suppose you've completed most of the story and plot.
Well, I completed the main story, and I just had the two expansion stories to finish off.
Mm-hmm. Last I heard you talking about Fable 2, you owned every building in the entire Albion.
Yeah, I own every building.
So, effectively, the sort of de facto king.
Yeah.
Mm, fair enough.
Which may well be the plot of Fable 3.
I see.
Clever that. Yes, I also went back and I had a look at the pub games.
Yeah, this is their sort of little extra sideshowy type of thing they had in Fable 1 as well.
Yeah, released just before Fable 2 on Xbox Live, had a separate game, downloadable game, which was the pub games, where you could build up cash before you
take that
main
through
game.
Into the main game, yeah.
Now, what I did was I built up a massive debt.
Started off the main game in poverty.
No, I didn't. I forgot to link my character as well.
Just as well, really.
But I actually went and linked it this week. And paid off the debt with about 2 minutes worth of...
Yes, if only it were that easy in real life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Still don't get the pub games. They're still a little bit too random. Yeah. And the games aren't really designed that well.
I mean, the pub games from Fable 1 didn't really capture me. I couldn't see myself sitting down and playing those for 2 hours straight. I mean, they're a nice little aside and they lent a bit of extra depth to the world, I suppose, but in their own right, yeah, not that special.
No. What else? Oh yes, Lodro.
Yes.
We did book 9.
We did book 9. Straight on with volume 1, yeah.
Yeah.
Cracking on there.
Because that's a bad book.
Yes and no.
It's all story and no trousers.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, there wasn't an awful lot of gameplay there. It was a lot of solo instances, quite a few instances where you literally just have to spectate and watch the plot unfold. But then, from a storytelling perspective, I got a feeling this sets us up for the remainder of Volume 1. I think, the old nemesis we destroyed in Book 8, and Book 9 introduces a whole new one. So we got this, and there's a big reveal there, and there's a whole load of... And you finally get to see Sauron.
The
big flaming eye.
And he talks to you and everything.
He is fantastic.
He knows who
so
I am.
Much
I'm famous
dread.
Now.
But So that was, I think that was a sort of necessary, I think view book nine, you know, volume one, book nine, more in the nature of an interlude rather than a book proper. Because, yeah, I mean, I think it's a necessary setup for the what comes later, and sort of tidies up the previous one as well. But, yeah, it didn't take much to do. Although I noticed I was the only one who died in that final solo instance. Everyone else got through it in one go, and I got a bit too involved and got killed. So
you actually fought, didn't you?
I had to, yeah. I did. I incorrectly attempted to participate and got killed for it, so I had to do it twice.
Yes, what else have we done in Lotro? We did
Urengarath, is it? One of the Khan Dum instances.
Oh, yes.
A funny thing happened on the way to Khan Dum, yeah.
Well, yeah, whenever we're trying to go somewhere, we get distracted.
Yeah, we're on our way to the main Khan Dum instance and saw a whirly gateway off to the side and thought, oh, let's have a look in here. And spent the next 2 hours totally scouring a massive great...
Decimated it.
Yeah, big orc camp and big... peak with some drakes, or the big named nemesis drake thing, elite drake thing there, was quite good. It's quite hard work, took a few goes.
That was a very hard fight. May have wiped once or twice.
Basically involves me standing on my own in the middle of the big drake enclosure with everyone else hiding behind a rock.
Actually,
we
never actually wiped on that, did we? We always managed to exploit it by running away.
We sort of, yeah, kited the hell out of it, but lost quite a few people a couple of times. Yeah. Got there in the end. That was an excellent instance because it gave us an awful lot of trophy items for our big class roundup.
Yes, we need to go back
and
to
got,
those.
Yeah,
and,
we've got to go
back. I've got a couple missing still.
There's a few more to get from in there for everyone, I think.
Yeah, and most importantly, we wiped enough for it to give me my res deed.
That's remarkable, actually, considering...
I've resed 100 people using
it. Only 100 people in what, a year?
Maybe we don't
eight
suck.
Books
as,
of volume one, yeah, I think we're doing all right.
Suck as much as we think.
Either that or the others are beating you to the res.
Yeah, it does happen sometimes. Yeah, looking forward to book 10.
Yeah, I think this is... Well, I mean, we've been dumped in Evendim as a result, and that whole section that we didn't know what was for at the south of the lake, with all the Angarim soldiers who are, like, 10 levels higher than everything else in the zone, that's all explained to us now, and that's open as an optional extra activity.
Yeah, which, going by the banners up on the wall saying... Because it's got control points in there.
Yeah.
And there's three banners on the wall saying who controls it, whether or not it's the people or the NPCs.
I think you
and
have
to... I don't think anyone does this.
No, so we have to storm through there. I think you have to control all those to open up access to some instances or something. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what it's about.
I don't know what it takes to control them, but we'll have a good go.
Just go in there and kill everyone. That's the usual plan, isn't it? We're not subtle.
We may have a subtle plan, but it always ends up as being go in there and kill everyone.
Yeah.
There rarely turns out to be the place we intend to go.
But. Have you done any extracurricular Lotro at all?
I haven't, actually.
No, busy with other stuff.
Yeah, just too many other games to play.
It's a good sort of pace, though. I mean, yeah, obviously, I think quite a few people would rightly question the value for money of only playing an MMO once a week, but then I suppose the pacing's worked well for us.
It has.
Because many of us have busy lives, either other games or actual real-life stuff, and it's just good to turn it into a kind of social night once a week rather than this unending grind of hour after hour every night, which many MMOs can turn into and suffer as a result.
Oh, definitely.
I think I'm getting my money's worth.
And I've got my lifetime subscription.
Well,
so
in your case, it doesn't really matter. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What else? Oh, yes.
Hmm.
Why talk about that one? There's South Park Tower Defense.
South Park Tower Defense.
I wasn't going to like this.
Hello.
I decided I wasn't going to play it. I wasn't going to like it.
So it's South Park, which many people either love or hate. It's Tower Defense games, which people either love or hate. And, well, are we talking 360, is this?
Yeah, it's a 360 downloadable game.
Uh-huh.
Was released this week, and I thought, oh, okay, I'll have a quick look at it. And
yeah.
I'm really enjoying it.
Ah,
I don't
okay.
like Tower Defense games.
Yeah, they take a certain mindset to get your head around. I mean, the idea of setting it all up beforehand and then just letting the thing run its course. I suppose, you know, often you can drop extra towers in as you do well, but mostly it's all about the setup and then just letting it happen. So,
yeah.
Does the South Park angle enhance the tower defence game? Because you can get tower defence games as flash games free from pretty much any old website.
It's got video content and stuff, so yeah. It's an interesting little world, isn't it? So,
yeah,
it's not that bad.
Fair enough.
I quite like it. What
totally
else?
Good.
Oh, yes. After the last show, I decided to buy a couple of PS3 games because, you know, it was mentioned that Resistance 2's story was quite good. I thought, I've never played this. I will get around to actually buying the damn thing. I got that, and I got Pacific Rift as well, which is a driving game.
Yeah.
How big do you reckon the patch for that was when I put it in?
I don't know.
600 meg.
600 meg patch?
Yeah, for a game.
That's the entire of a CD, isn't it?
A 600 meg patch, which you can't tell to download in the background, so while you're doing it, your console's stuck and can't do anything else.
Oh, that's bad. Does the PS3, as a rule, not have background downloading? Or
very
is this,
rarely.
This a particular
when
thing?
You buy stuff from the store, it does. Everything else doesn't.
Oh, I see.
Really annoying.
Yeah.
So that's why I was playing South Park.
Right. So you still don't know what this specific riff thing's all
about.
Oh,
I had a quick game, but my enthusiasm for it's a little bit...
I know, I find that as well. You get there and you load the thing up and you think, I'll have a quick go at such and such. I think it was Portal in my case. I decided I'd have a quick go at that the other night. And Steam kicks off and says, here is a patch. No, I think it had already patched it, but for some reason there was a massive file fragmentation on it. And it's sort of, I'm going to defrag your thing now. Do you mind? I thought, okay, go on then. And I got about 3 minutes in and then just gave up and went and played something else instead. So, you know, when a patch itself, you know, is such an inconvenience you can't be bothered to wait through it to actually play the game, is that a problem with us or with games in general?
Problem with the games. You shouldn't have to do a 600 meg patch for a game. Okay, you might add new content, but that should be a separate unexpected download.
Patching's the thing, isn't it? If you know that a patch is coming, you can plan for it, you don't mind so much. But if you just want a quick go at a quick game and then find this massive roadblock in the way, MMOs in particular can be a problem with this, then yeah, it sort of puts you off playing it at all, really.
Yeah.
How fickle we are.
I know. Terrible, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, so it's okay. It's a MotorStorm game. Haven't really got into it that hard much. I find them quite hard.
Mm.
They're basically a racing game where you have different classes of vehicles in the same race, and your tracks have different routes you can take, which are better for different vehicles.
I see. So very much learning the cars, learning the course, that kind of thing.
Mm. Yeah, before you know the courses properly, it's a little bit tough. So
yeah.
I have to keep pushing on with that.
Uh-huh.
And you'll be pleased to hear there wasn't a trophy for just racing.
Yeah. Bing, 100 points, have logged in. Yeah.
Yeah, that seems to be one of the differences with trophies on the PS3 to achievements. Achievements will give you one quite early on just for...
They're a bit more mature about the assignment of trophies? Trophies are for finishing things, is that?
I'm not sure that it's actually better, though, because you tend to not get them until you've actually achieved something more. And so you don't get that early... ding saying, yeah, these are in the game, these are implemented, and look, you did something right.
So it's all less of a learning curve thing, it doesn't ramp up as well.
Yeah.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah, strange really. What else? Oh yes, last night was bad. Awful lot of playing Beatles Rock Band.
Okay.
Yeah, I was doing vocals.
Oh gosh. I think I heard you from my house actually.
Five starred all the songs down.
Uh-huh. Gonna make you sing on the show 1 week.
No. I was actually doing okay and doing... I five-starred a song on second highest difficulty.
Ah,
yeah.
Excellent.
Huh?
Practice makes perfect.
I can't do the highest difficulty at all because I can't sing.
Ah, this is a lot more discerning about the pitch band, is it?
Yeah.
I see. You've got to be a lot closer.
Yeah, and the bit I tend to do, the first note where I'm searching to find the note...
That's called the warm-up. Just do that before the thing starts, yeah.
There's just a slight wibble when I start.
Calibrating.
Yeah. I'm not very good at singing at all. I shouldn't do it.
Nah, stick to the guitar, then. Stick to the instrument you enjoy.
Well, I think I'd prefer the drums.
Mm.
Because the guitar gets really, really hard and my fingers just don't move that well.
Right.
Yeah.
So early onset arthritis creeping in, is it?
Yeah, something like that. All these years of gaming. Then there's... Okay, next, there's Scribblenauts.
Scribblenauts, yeah, you showed me that a little bit. That's a surreal experience. So what's that all about?
Basically, it's a DS game where you write a name of an item and it appears.
Yes. I was trying to bamboozle it, and it consistently knew pretty much everything I suggested, apart from anything to do with sex or alcohol.
Yeah.
Nah.
You didn't really get very far with building your nuclear bomb either.
No. I typed in uranium and it understood that. Small rock appeared. I typed in uranium again and small rock there. I got him to pick it up, but I couldn't make him attack the uranium with the other uranium. So I think the atomic age is going to be some way off in Scribblenauts. Yeah. Although I didn't just try typing atom bomb in. That might work.
I don't know. I've tried that.
Well, surprised with what it does know, though, yeah. Although, to be honest, I think it was cheating. When I typed polonium, it just did another grey rock, not very much like uranium, so I'm not entirely sure it's quite as clever as all that. Although I typed in mime and one appeared, which then fell over my polonium. Oh, right. Yeah,
atom bomb works.
Typed in atom bomb, and there it is. So I was going with being too oblique about my solution, yes. And I typed in mime. The mime fell over the polonium, turned into a zombie, and then a dog ate it. So, whoa, whole screen goes white. Blimey.
Yeah, do not use the atom bomb and screw it off.
I'm very impressed with it, actually, and slightly frightened by it at the same time.
The controls are a little bit broken. You walk to where you click on the screen, so when you're trying to clip the end of a flailing rope or something, you can miss and die quite easily.
A bit of control lag there, perhaps.
Yeah, and you do have to be disciplined. It is quite easy to just use easy mode and pick something really obvious to solve the problems.
So it becomes a bit more of an art. It's sort of more of a sandbox in which you can create the solution in as obscure a way as possible.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to another friend during the week about Forza 3, and he doesn't like it because it's got the rewind option for when you're racing, which got me thinking, there are all these games which you can play the easy way through.
Yeah.
Is it wrong to not want to step aside and say, right, I'm going to play this the hard way?
I don't think so. I think you set your own difficulties. I think it's about self-discipline. You can set your own rules that exist on top of the rules a game gives you. I mean, Thief is a good example. I mean, yes, if you set the difficulty to master level, you get things like must not be seen by anyone at all. Whereas if you set it to easy level, you can just go through and sword it up all the way through. But I still would consider it a failure if anyone spotted me, even if I was on easy mode.
Well,
so I'd make the game more difficult for myself.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Even if you can't turn a feature off in a game, like...
You can stop
summoning the helicopter and Scribblenauts.
helicopter trumps all, does it? Yeah.
Yeah. The question is, Assassin's Creed's a good game for that. You can play that the easy way, or you can, which is just tank your way through it and kill everyone, or you can sneak up in it. I think a lot of people, and I don't know if this is wrong or right, will just go through and won't. Or can't play the hard way. Either because they don't want to, or they get so far they get frustrated and think, oh, bugger, I'll just tank it up or whatever.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, if you're not as perhaps as skillful at a particular title as other players, you might want to just use all the tools it gives you. Whereas if you... It's just basically this is handicapping yourself. It's like golf handicaps or this, that and the other. You make the game artificially a bit more difficult than it's meant to be to increase your own enjoyment. I mean, at the end of the day, as long as you're enjoying the way you're playing, there's nothing wrong with it either way, I think. But, yeah, many games lend themselves to this kind of thing.
I like Scribblenauts. If the controls were better...
It does look fun. You could have a lot of fun just trying to exhaust its vocabulary, if nothing else.
Yeah, it's not a game I can play for more than 10 minutes at a time. Well, I don't think it's designed to be.
Well, it's a little handheld DS game. You don't want 4-hour-long epic sessions on that if you're on a train or something.
Yeah. So, no,
serves its purpose well,
it.
I think.
Yes. Some of the reviews have been incredibly harsh, but I think if you're a bit more disciplined and you can put up with him dying from stupidity.
Yes, you can crash through it very quickly if you keep typing helicopter, but...
Where's the fun in that?
Exactly. Try something a bit more unexpected. See if that works too. Yeah.
Yeah. The other games I've played...
Mm-hmm.
Phone's off. I've been on my phone.
Ah. iPhone games.
I've been playing a bit of Spider.
Spider
is an iPhone game where you're a spider and you have to catch flies and eat them. And you've got lots of furniture. It's a 2D game and you can jump from one area to another. You're a jumping spider who can jump between furniture, and you can also, when you're jumping, leave a line of silk. Now if you join up the lines of silk into a shape, then it fills in and becomes a web. Which you can use to catch the flies. And that's about it. And it was really quite fun, really quite addictive.
Just a sort of very simple concept that you could play over and over and over, I suppose.
And it's really well designed. It's really nice.
So if you've got an iPhone, look out for that.
Yeah, it's a really nice, handy game to have when you've got 5 minutes to spare. You can plan out a couple of levels.
Yeah. Very much an on-the-move kind of game. Yeah, we're literally talking sat on a train, on a bus, whatever. Kind of thing.
Waiting for a meeting to start, or in a meeting and
during a meeting,
really boring.
Yeah,
or when you're in the pub, somebody takes your phone and plays it for ages and ignores you.
Yeah, don't mind me.
Yeah. I don't know how long it's going to last me. I don't know how long until it gets really repetitive, but so far...
Enjoy the moment, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And the other game, which name I'm trying to get, but the damn thing's not starting fast enough.
If you just describe it, we'll turn the name into a competition.
No, the other one I was playing is Doodle Jump.
Doodle Jump.
Doodle Jump.
Okay.
Which I will start now. which is this wonderful game.
Yeah.
Where you're a little thing. It's all little scribbly hand-drawn graphics.
Uh-huh.
And you have to climb to the top of an awful lot of floating platforms.
Okay, sort of which platformer.
Which you do by jumping.
Uh-huh.
Now, you control it by tilting the iPhone left or right to decide if you go left or right.
Okay.
And if you touch the screen, it will fire something up.
Uh-huh.
And basically, that's it. So you just jump around, you bounce, you bounce, you bounce, you bounce, you bounce, you bounce.
Yeah, okay, okay, I think we get the idea.
And then you die.
Great noise.
And that's it.
Yes.
And it's really quite... And it's all about the high scores.
Uh-huh.
So
almost like a pinball type of experience. That
sort of, yeah.
It seems like these sort of iPhone games are pretty much where proper home computer gaming was sort of 10 years ago, but sort of following in the same sorts of footsteps. Your Manic Miners, your Space Invaders,
yeah,
that sort of
whether
thing.
Or not they'll develop into something bigger, because I'm not sure you want something bigger on your phone.
It's a very different sort of purpose, isn't it?
Yeah, and the good thing about the iPhone games at the moment is they really understood what their purpose is.
Mm.
And
those will be the ones that sell, are the ones that fit people's lives as they're carrying these things around.
Yeah,
very much so.
And I really do appreciate having a couple of games on my phone which are good, that I can play when I've got a couple of minutes. Because it's okay having Snake or something.
Solitaire,
like,
yeah.
You know, but they're just not that enjoyable.
Hmm.
And being able to buy new games is quite good too, when you want. Because you just go over to the store, you've got wireless anyway, you just download them.
Right.
And I guess that's all the games I played.
Really? Hmm. Bit of a quiet fortnight. You've been doing some indie games for us for next week, have you? Yeah, oh, good stuff.
I also played Halo 1.
Halo 1?
Yeah.
Blimey, old school.
I decided to start playing through from the beginning.
Ah, right, to find out what the hell's going on, yeah.
Oh, and I also started another playthrough of Metal Gear Solid 4, because it was still on after the show.
Yeah, after the show, you'd gone through the intro screen. It'd be a shame to waste that much time out of your life. You might as well carry on and play it, yeah.
It is still a good game.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah. Anyway, what have you been playing?
Well, yes, okay. Well, there's me with LOTRO again, obviously. We did very much all of the stuff that you said earlier. I've been doing a little bit of extracurricular, trying to work on... It's a strange thing. It's not actually questing. What I'm doing is I'm trying to empty my bags. This is my big mission at the moment. My bags are full of stuff I cannot bear to part with. And this is all quest items or hand-ins or crafting materials. And so I'm basically going on this, taking time to make these big forays into, like, instances that were grey to us 40 levels ago, just so that I can do the little quest and get rid of the item out of my bag. It's that kind of...
That's the reason I'm doing my class quest, to get rid of those two bits of paper.
Yeah, those two bits of paper and the stacks of purple collectibles, yes. So I've been sort of doing that. I'm also trying to work on my tailoring a bit as well. This is the difficult one. I mean, I'm almost supreme master cook just through making the big bundles of food for our Monday night outings, and that's great. I've not had to grind that at all. But the tailoring is a whole different story, because I can't do my own height. So
that's annoying.
Yeah, it's my third crafting skill. So I have to run around lobby areas, one-hitting wolves to get their light hides. Then I bung it all in a bank box and then log across to the alt, go and turn it into leather, and then... back in the bank box, etc., etc. And I sort of appreciate that other players are supposed to be doing this, and this is a reason to have friends and make you know, community and stuff.
Yeah.
But consider this: if you're capable of doing the hides, you're probably also capable of tailoring.
Yeah.
So there's one where you get the hides and the tailoring, and there's one where you get the hides and wood crafting instead, because the hides thing is the same as the wood chopping skill.
Yeah.
Anyway, basically, the odds are, if you're capable of getting hides, you need them for your own stuff, which makes either that or you're just fleecing people on the auction house. So I've rolled up an alt and I'm trying to keep it all in-house, as it were. But it's quite tedious, and also it's areas where the monsters are just way, way grey. I'm not anywhere near monster areas that give me XP for the hides I can actually use, so that's always a problem. But it's always a problem if you restart a crafting profession in any game, to be honest. You've got to go back to square one, back to the newbie area, and start farming and scouring all the newbie wolves, which are depriving the new people of wolves. You know, I'd like to see sliding scale of resources that are correct for wherever you are. You know?
Yeah.
Does it matter that you can get light hide from one monster and someone next to you is getting excellent hide? Does it matter?
It should be down to their skill, not the skill of the creature.
Yeah. I mean, does the animal have an intrinsically thicker hide, or is it that you're better at pulling the hide off?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so grumble, grumble.
Have you got any further with finding us a new replacement hat?
No, I'm still need to rank up. I've seen a number of hats which are still not as impressive or comical as the hat that we currently use for our big guild hat. But I'm working on it.
Because we need a new hat. Because that's very much a Steve hat, and Steve's gone now.
I know, but we'll find the new hat. But I have to work my way up the ranks. But do write in if you know of any fantastic Lord of the Rings hats we can adopt as our guild
emblem.
Has
to really be craftable.
Craftable is the best bet. Yeah. Had a little bit of a poke around in Moriah earlier today. I've gotten to the 22nd hall now, and I found out where all the players are.
Okay.
Yeah. A very busy little hub there with all the shops and travel point, although the monsters all around the place are orange to me at the moment, and I'm level 53, so a bit more to go on there. But, I'm surprised how little time I've spent in there. It's like I'm saving it until we're all ready to go and do it properly, you know?
We're going to be so out-leveled by the time
we
get there.
We're going to go in there at level 60 and just like storm through the first 15 chapters or whatever, but I'm taking time to just do a bit of tourism in there, and I've really sort of forgotten what it's like to be perilously running around areas that are far too high for me, you know, because now we're almost at the top anyway.
And yeah,
then, well, we've out-leveled all of the old, you know, the Eriador sections apart from Eregion, so suddenly finding orange monsters is a bit of a shock, to be honest, but that's quite good. The old thrill of danger, they're scampering around the place running, going with a big train following you as you looking for these dwarven halls and stuff. Yeah, I think I don't want to spoil too much of it for myself for when we do go in there and try and do it properly. But
there are books in there as well, aren't there? So
yeah, there's the whole, I mean, I'm not touching those. Obviously, we'll save those for the group night. But yeah, just having a poke around, seeing some fantastic world design in there. Actually, very three dimensional, a lot of gloomy indoor cave architecture, but sort of crazy dwarven angles everywhere. It's all good stuff. Let's see, there's been Guild Wars. We've been sort of wrapping up the Titan missions. Oh, we had a serious go at the 4 out of 4 old Ascalon Titan roundup missions this week. Quite hard work. We had to split into 2 teams of 4. The other lot went through all right, but our team had a lot of problems putting together a useful 4-man build that could cope with oncoming waves of level 24 Titans. Titans, incidentally, split into 2 monsters when you kill them, and then those split into 2 monsters as well. It's all quite complex stuff, and it's the pacing of it, and of course it's an escort mission as well.
Okay, yes. That's really unfair.
I know. It's just everything I hate in quest design all in one place, really, which is quite hard. We got through in the end, and you know how we did it? With me, the Mesmer, tanking.
What were the others doing?
I know, we didn't really have any sort of warriors or dervishes. I think we had an assassin, but they were mostly doing support stuff, so sort of DPS assist, and they couldn't really withstand the full-on assault. So I managed to do it by going with illusionary weapon Mesmer, with a lot of assassin support skills from Shadow Arts. So basically, I've got this bar that sets me up to, at no point am I ever under +9 health regeneration and taking half damage. Very survivable, but I absolutely can't do damage if I'm in that mode. And that matches tanking in many other games. It's just you don't expect the Enchanter class to be doing it, frankly.
Oh, but that's the joy of Guild Wars.
The uniqueness of Guild Wars, absolutely. Every class has access. I mean, it's sort of unintentional and an evolutionary thing, but there are particular builds that if you stumble across them by accident, you just move into this whole other league of survivability, of farm, you know, the ability to farm, the complete power of it all. One of our guild second in command there, Asgard, he's experimenting with a assassin build. I can't remember, I think it's Shadow Form, I don't know, it's described as the permascene, and basically as long as you get the timing on the cooldowns right on this bar, you are basically immune to all damage all the time.
So, okay, then.
Yeah, he's been tanking as an assassin, so you know, it's remarkable what you can get away with, and it's all down to Guild Wars' unique skill system, really. So that's all good. City of Heroes, we've been carrying on with our villains. Oh, new comedy power.
Okay.
Yes, fantastic one this week. I was in stitches. I always am. City of Heroes makes me giggle a lot for some reason. I think it's to do with just the absurdity of the comedy powers and the exasperation of the rest of the guild. But I got one called Wormhole, which is part of the Gravity Control Dominator set. And you target an enemy, and then you use the power, and you get the glowy ring click in a place in the world to target thing comes up.
Yeah.
And basically you pick a location and it will teleport the monster from wherever he is at the moment to where you specify. And I thought, wow, that's quite cool. It also disorients them when they come out the other end, because it's like a wormhole in space and time. So it's a short-range teleport foe. What I didn't realise was that it's actually an AoE as well.
Oh.
So we're all setting up to go for this big tanking incoming group of council, I think, with all the guns and everything. Brute runs in, charging up the rage bar. I hit the I hit the wormhole. The whole lot just flash and disappear. Fall off this ledge and drop about three stories down into this thing. Spend the next 10 minutes all sort of relay running back up the stairs, and it just went all over the place, and I had to sit on the naughty step again. So it happens an awful lot, actually. I seem to have picked the power combination gravity control and energy assault, which have the most combined annoyance powers in them between them. So it's basically new and interesting ways to wind everyone up every week. I don't do it on purpose. I'm not an evil person. Well, I am an evil person. That's the whole point, City of Villains. But what I mean is that I'm looking for ways to use these powers for good as well. And I realised that you could actually do it in reverse. As well as just sort of throwing all the monsters away from the melee characters to wind them up, you can do it in reverse and bring the ranged attackers into punching range using this same ability. Yes, it works two ways, and that is infinitely more useful. That way the brutes or scrappers or stalkers or whatever just need to stay in one place, get on with what they do, and I'll bring in the ranged characters so they don't have to go running around. I could imagine an ability like that being fantastically useful in Lord of the Rings, where we're always getting nailed by the archers at the back. It tend to be the problem a lot.
Yeah.
They're the big damage dealers, and we have to go chasing around after them one at a time. If you could gather them all up into one place and then hit them with the Tepotastic nuke frost rune, whatever it is, airstrike, fuel air bomb, whatever he's using there, that would be handy. Yeah, we did the Ouroboros first task force on the villain side, and that's interesting because there's when they introduced the Ouroboros, it's like a dual zone, heroes and villains both use it, but obviously the hero plot and the villain plot wouldn't make much sense for the others to be doing. You don't want to be doing villainy if you're a hero and vice versa. So we ended up on this task force where we got to go back in time and kill the president of the Rogue Isles, which was fantastic. The Rogue Isles is this big sort of just anarchy ruled by Lord Recluse and the Arachnos, but it wasn't always like that, you see. And turns out the reason that it is a big despotic villain's playground is because we went back in time and assassinated the rightful rulers and authorities of it all.
You ruined everything again.
Yes, it's the Ouroboros is responsible for more temporal paradox than I could shake a stick at, frankly. It really doesn't do to pay too much attention and think too heavily about what goes on in a lot of the task forces, because it's always about going backwards in time and ensuring that you do exist or don't exist. Or the villain, the main group that run the Ouroboros are called Menders. Mender, Silas, Mender, such and such. And they're called Menders because basically they spend all their time going backwards in time and fixing stuff. Because of people like us, mostly.
Time cops.
Yes, in a way, very much so, yeah. And the good thing about the Ouroboros task force is that, as well as the missions themselves, which are interesting, you occasionally find boxes, little clicky glowable, you know, clicky whatevers, and you click on them, and inside you'll find little scraps of text which seem to be written by yourself to yourself from a future self, and they're just full of really cryptic stuff as well that really just sort of turn the mind screw a little bit more, just to completely mess the place up. It's fantastic, very much. And also it functions as a fantastic teleport hub as well. You get, as soon as you find the place, if you get the little explorer badge that's on top of the big sundial thing, you can teleport there whenever you like. And then from there you can teleport back out to any number of other normal zones, so it's a good travel hub as well. Yeah, I think that's probably about it for the MMOs. DDO, of course.
Of course, yes.
The DDOU. This is the Eberron Unlimited freebie thing. That's very popular. We were playing it Friday, and I was trying to log in, and I got a server full message. I honestly can't remember the last server full message I've ever seen. Obviously, I've got my 3-month rule thing going on, which means I tend not to turn up in the big rush at the start anyway. But,
well, yeah, cheated this time because it's a re-release.
Well, it's a re-release, yeah. So I don't know if I violated my own 3-month rule there or not, really. But
You both have and haven't.
I'm so confused. But yeah, so server full on Kyber, which is the server that we're all playing on. Yeah, we started a little guild there. I think we've got illusions of a static Friday group going on there. So that'd be interesting to see how far we get. We did pretty much all of the Kothos Island stuff, Misery's Peak and such like, and have just about wound up in the City of Stormreach itself proper now, which is good stuff. It's gonna take getting used to that game though, because it's very fast paced, far more it's up there with Guild Wars, and yet at the same time you've got standard MMO hotkeys and D&D rule set stats and all the rest of it. It's very confusing mix, and that's possibly why I didn't really get on with it that well during my Operation Cheap Seats way, way back when I tried it proper. You know, it just seemed a strange hybrid of D&D stats and dice and first-person shooter gameplay with bows and swords and things. And clearly that's not going to be to everyone's taste, but, you know, it's free. You can't complain.
So you reckon this, them going free, has been a massive success?
I think that's the main reason, yeah. I mean, it's quite clever, the integration with the item shop and everything. There's all the obvious candidates are there, things like XP potions, booster heal potion packs, etc. But things like the sigil that you need to create a guild, I think one of our lot went and bought one of those with some 3 turbine points or whatever. So we've actually got a proper guild going. But what I mean, that all seems very, I don't know, redundant. No, that's not the word. But it's stuff I could do without. You take it or leave it. You know, if you really desperately want to power your way to the top of the game as quickly as possible, the tools are there for you to do so. You just need to pay for it. What seemed more interesting to me is the way they're selling adventures as well.
That seems like a good way of doing it.
Well, it's very much the original D&D module. These will be little the D&D modules that you'd buy as little paperback sort of A4 booklets that you'd add to your campaigns as and when you needed. And they seem to be doing very much that kind of model with it, with their item shop. Because as well as all the, you know, the XP potion junk, you can also buy, say, pay X number of turbine points for an adventure that contains 3 or 4 dungeons and a little bit of a story that goes with it. And I think that, more than anything else, will be the way they'll go and the way they'll earn their money. Because people don't mind paying extra for content, because effectively they become miniature expansions. It's when, you know, you're basically just buying stuff that many people believe by rights should be in the game already. That's when you start to get the conflict and the friction, I think. So, I mean, I'm determined not to spend anything in there if I can help it, but I expect we might get drawn along by our own enthusiasm. We'll soon see. So, yeah, possibly a regular thing there. I mean, we had 7 people already in the guild, and there's only 6 people in the party. So, once again, those old problems creeping up. So it may end up having to be 2 teams or this, that and the other. How do you design an enjoyable instanced adventure for 48 people? It's just going to be tricky.
You just keep throwing more random monsters in.
Bigger stats. I mean, it's interesting the different difficulty levels that they apply to that game. I mean, we were doing a lot. We were doing pretty much everything we could on elite mode, you know, the hardest difficulty, because we had a full team and we sort of knew what we were doing. And it was distinctly harder than, you know, we're seeing whole new monster spawns appearing that weren't there in hard, and, you know, better rewards, all this, that, and the other. So, very flexible difficulty system there. So, quite enjoying that. And that's about it, really, for the PC. And then, of course, there's my new Xbox 360, of course.
I'm not saying anything.
Yes, well, it was a sort of almost by accident I ended up with this, really. It was a second-hand broken 3 Rings of Death one that I managed to get the warranty working on, and ended up sending off and getting a replacement back. And, so I'm now the proud owner of an Xbox 360 of my very own. So if you're seeing me pop up on Xbox there, that is actually me on an Xbox, not just me playing Fallout 3 and being confused about game invites anymore. So, yeah, and you lent me a few games, didn't you?
Yep.
Yeah, so my big introduction to the world of Xbox 360 gaming was Burnout Paradise.
Which, I thought I couldn't go wrong with giving you
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, I just heard you making all sorts of outrageous claims about how awesome it was over and over for many, many months, and I thought, all right, we'll give it a go. And it is very good. I mean, I'm not a driving game person by nature, but this could make me one, you know? I enjoy Burnout Paradise. I mean, I found that with the previous Burnout games. I've enjoyed those. When I don't like something straight like Forza or whatever, you know, whatever your big your proper driving game is, where you're supposed to not crash, that kind of thing. Any game where you'd get points for crashing is a driving game I can probably cope with. So, yeah, I mean, I've been having a lot of trouble with it. It's fantastic fun and everything, and of course I drive on the left, which doesn't help.
It helps tremendously.
It helps a lot, yeah. Yeah, this is a unique advantage British players get on Burnout Paradise, is that we drive on the left, don't you know? Which means we get continually getting boost refills. You just got to watch for the oncoming headlights, which I find are easier to spot than taillights.
I do too.
Yes.
I find the same on the motorway.
Yes.
Of course,
you're going to be on the news one day.
It's made by a British company, of course.
Yes, yes. Well, could you see them doing Burnout set in a Britain?
No.
British Burnout? No, it'd be too many roundabouts for a start.
It would sort of lack all of the fun.
Yeah, I think so. It's perhaps not quite the same kind of culture. But yeah, I'm working on my car collection. I think I'm about 30 or 40 out of 75 now. I mean, I can see a lot of the road rules times on every street I go down. It's all Senyek. I'm going to beat you. I'm going to own that game one day. I'm going to... But I need the cars to do it in, that's the thing. I think I'm just at a bit of a disadvantage early on.
But the problem is, by the time you get the cars, you've set time to them all, unlocked that achievement, I can't really be bothered to go back and reset them.
Well, it's not so really about the achievements.
What you need is someone to come along and beat your time to force you to come and thrash them, basically.
Well, we'll see. But I'm in my apprenticeship, I think. I'm up to about a Class B licence at the moment. I'm still picking away at that. But not bad for, you know, early starting time. I just love the freedom of it all. It is great. I've just had, you know, I spent whole hours just going round and round that I-88 big motorway that goes around the middle of it all.
Yeah.
Not trying to beat a rule, not crash times, not a race or anything, just driving.
Just enjoying the driving.
Just for the hell of it, yeah. And that's remarkable, because I don't think I've ever played a racing game. Well, by nature, they are racing games. You have to beat the clock. That's the point. So it's really refreshing to come across a driving game where you can just drive. Just for the hell of it, you know, no pressure, no deadlines, no times. It really is quite a novelty, and I was really dubious about the idea of an open world driving game when they sort of, you know, you were telling me about Burnout Paradise compared to its predecessors, which were all very much routes and times and that sort of thing. But it really does work well. Yeah, I've seen the Big Fun Island. I drive up the road and it keeps turning me around and sending me away because I haven't paid my money, so that's annoying. We had a bit of an online session.
We did, yes.
That was good, yeah. And you kept hiding up the pay-for road.
Can't get me.
Yeah, every time I tried to ram you, it just picked me up and turned me around and sent me back into the city again. Cheating, obviously. But yeah, I was quite interested by the challenge things we were doing.
Oh, yes, we did a couple of three-player challenges.
Three-player challenges. So what was that all about? Because I was sort of having trouble understanding a lot of it at the time.
Basically, the person who started the session can flick through a list of challenges and pick ones to do.
Okay, and that will set a task that all three people have to cooperatively achieve. I see. So it's not all about just racing and being faster than each other. You've got to work together to get, like, the jumping over the cars ones. That was interesting.
Yeah.
All of you got to line up in a particular place, and then one of you has to jump over all the others. So. And then take
That's
turns.
Quite hard with an eight-player pickup group.
Yeah, I imagine random pickup groups must be quite good. I've not gone online randomly yet. I'm just doing friends only at the moment. But good fun with that. I can see myself chipping away at it. It's got that drop-in feel to it, isn't it? You just fire it up for 10 minutes, do a quick race or something, then log off and do something else.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, and that's. I've often lamented that PC games, well, certainly the ones I buy and MMOs as well, don't really present you with that kind of quick experience. And yeah, I did have the Xbox One, obviously, but it's just good to have something you can chip away at over a longer period, but in smaller chunks, I suppose. I've also been playing Just Cause, another game I
gave you.
I haven't bought any of my own yet. Just trying them out.
Microsoft hates you.
I know. I'm the worst kind of 360 owner, but yeah, like that. It's sort of a GTA kind of thing, but set on an unnamed South American island where there's this big dictator you're trying to overthrow province by province. And I thought, looking at the box and the background and the reading about it and that sort of thing, I thought it'd be quite a subtle thing where you go in and, you know, meet people in bars and influence decisions and do a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. No, it's not at all. You just drive it. The game opens with you parachuting into a gunfight.
Yeah.
Goes downhill from there, really. I mean, overthrowing settlements is in the literal sense with grenades, and but I'm really enjoying that. It's fantastic looks to that game.
Yeah,
I've just sort of blown away, because obviously this is, you know, these are my first two 360 games that I've really sat down and had a good long look at, and I've just been sort of blown away by the graphical quality, the speed it all moves along, the sort of frame rate and everything. Quite a revelation compared to my PC, which struggles with titles of a similar vintage. And I thought I had a decent PC, a decent spec, but turns out that it's fallen far behind. And then at the end of the day, yes, I see that you got one box you pay for once and that will sort you out for all your games. You know, you don't need to have the right graphics card, you don't need to keep upgrading the memory every 5 minutes. I mean, you had a spare hard disk that I slapped on the side, but that's just for storing save games, really, isn't it, and downloads. And the downloads, I had a quick go Brutal Legend, the demo.
Okay, yes. I haven't tried that yet.
No, you should. I think it's very good. Jack Black playing the role of some...
Jack Black?
I think so, yeah, basically. You're this rock roadie with this sort of pop, this bouncy pop new age metal group, and he's really sort of dissatisfied with the whole thing. And then the set collapses on him and you end up in hell, but like heavy metal hell. And it's just sort of massively over the top with all of the sort of album art and the rock stereotypes and everything. It's very, very good fun. Now, I don't know what it is. It's like a sort of there's fighting sections that are a bit like Fable. There's driving sections. I mean, the demo doesn't show you too much of it. I do like the... There's a bit you can do to summon special abilities from particular shrines. You have to play power chords on your guitar. And when you start it off, it actually does a mini Guitar Hero scrolling score along the top, and you have to hit the colour buttons in the right order. It's only a very miniature version of Guitar Hero, but that's what you need to do to kick off the abilities. I mean, the humour and the writing and stuff, I can tell already, are going to be fantastic. So,
well, I should hope so, considering who it is.
Who is it?
Tim Schafer,
yeah. Who is famous for?
Dare the Tentacle.
Oh, right, yeah. So it's very LucasArts tradition to it. Yeah.
Also Psychonauts, which is a brilliant game.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how the full game will play out. The demo's quite short, but I did enjoy what I saw, yeah. I also was playing Episode 1 of Fable 2.
Ah.
Because we were talking some time ago about them re-releasing it as episodes. Yes. And I sort of had a quick download. And I enjoyed what I played so far, but it is the demo. That's not really an Episode 1 at all. It sort of blocks you at the Bowerstone Lake once you're on your way out of there to go to Bowerstone. It's please download the next episode.
Can you get down into the thing under the lake?
Yes, the bit where you get your first willpower. Yeah. It does that, but that's about the limit of it. Once you're out of there, that's it, really. And that's fair enough. It costs nothing. It's free to play. So, and I may even buy more episodes. I don't know. I have to see. But, very impressed with my 360 so far. My name is Van Hemlock, predictably enough, on the 360. There is capital V, capital H, space between them. So do add me if you want to be my friend. And you may even be able to follow me along Paradise City at 30 mile an hour, watching me crash into every bridge support on the way for lols. So, yeah, that's pretty much what I've been doing.
Okay.
Yeah. So, on to the Twitter question.
Yep. Okay, if you take the new mouse...
Oh, crikey, what the hell is that? I mean, I need to describe this for you, dear listener. It's basically what looks like the illegitimate offspring of a Microsoft optical mouse and a Cylon Raider. It's got this nasty red eye that's pointing at me. You put your heel there, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Right, okay, so let's have a look there. I can't see from this angle. Rummage. Okie dokie. So, the podcast question then. I was banging on about clangers actually as well during the week. Do you see that moon bombing?
I did, yes.
America's declared war on the clangers. It's frightening.
Moon's still there, they failed.
Yeah. War on moon.
The more plausible one I saw was they were trying to blow it up to cure all of the werewolves.
The direct approach to lycanthropy. Yeah. I see. Well, anyway. Yes, news of max level characters and Aeon already. Yeah, we had a news item in our previous show. How long do you expect to be playing a new MMO for? How long have you in the past? Yes, I should have been a bit more clear here. What I mean here is in terms of long term rather than per session, but... Yeah, let's have a little look then. Kirith Kodachi first on the response there with, when I start an MMO, I assume I'll be playing for years. When I started EVE, my initial skill plan was 367 days.
Sir, you are strange.
You want to get some learning skills in there then, I think. Well, no, the learning skill route on the skill plan is for people who are going to be playing for more than two years, isn't it? It's frightening. But... yeah, I think you build up an expectation, don't you? You think, right, an MMO, it's a big commitment. I'm going to be playing this for a very long time. And I wonder, is that even valid? I mean, why should a particular title be something you... Well, certainly I don't feel I can approach and start playing unless I've got a spare 8 months, you know? Is it wrong to expect to get any kind of enjoyment or fun or progress out of a simple 1 month subscription of an MMO? Decide to put down 1 month for it and only play that and take your fill there? Or was it just something about the long term that sort of distorts our expectations? Let's see, Zozo, hopefully. Oh, yeah, that's right. He's on about DDO there. Yep. DM Osborne, wish I had time for MMOs. Maybe it's a blessing, I don't. Yeah, well, precisely. I mean, the sort of long play nature of them, they will take up. Well, I mean, we've been playing quite lightly, really, in LOTRA, haven't we? 1 3-hour session a week, 3 or 4 hours. Many people feel that they're expected to put more in than that. And it becomes a very big a big commitment, I suppose, yeah. Welsh Troll, Aeon took longer than Champions then, ? Does max level relate to how long you play? Not for me. Entertain me, please. Yeah, I mean, the I suppose this was a bit of a leading question, really. I mean, clearly those people who've got their level 50s, they're likely to keep playing. They'll start new characters and now be able to relax now they've beaten the big time trial. They'll be able to play through it properly, actually read quest text and stuff. So possibly reaching the max level isn't necessarily the end of your enjoyment of an MMO. There's always alts, there's always alternate gameplay. So yes, I know this is a bit of a leading question designed to provoke discussion, but it seems it's done so. So job done. Eric's Joe, MMOs should be playable for months / years. Unfortunately, the recent ones, War and Conan, he's got his examples there, I tried, only lasted a few weeks. Yeah, I think it's about, does it click as well?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter how long they intend you to play. If you're not enjoying the basic gameplay, then you're just not going to stick around. I mean, my recent trial of Pirates of the Burning Sea was an example of that. A fine game in its own right, but just something about it didn't really work for me. And so I probably wouldn't have wanted to stick around, even if I wasn't only doing free trials. But, yeah, your mileage may vary, as they say. Let's see. Unwise there. Podcast question. Hope to stay in War long term, but only lasted a month. Hope to stay in Aeon for a month, but only lasted a week. So perhaps issues with the specific titles in question there. I've not given Aeon a go myself. By reputation, it's something of a grinder, though. Something of a long play. Something of a repetition exercise to get the levels, which makes this whole max level news particularly interesting. But then, yes, is repetition enough? Do you want different interesting experiences as you go through? Perhaps Aeon doesn't provide much in the way of horizontal exploration, things to do that are off the track of 1 to 50. Maybe levelling up was the only thing to do in there. Who knows? I certainly don't. I haven't had a go yet. Let's see. Bevis, are we talking lifespan or in one session? Yes. sorry about that. Lifespan, of course. The main factor for me in the game's lifespan is my companions. Doubt I'd be playing LOTRO or COX without the friends I have in there. Well, very much it's peer groups, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I tend sometimes, well, not so much lately, in fact, hardly at all in the last year or two, but I have gone at these things as solo projects. I've just gone in there to try and play the game and, you know, accept whatever level progression quest path is put in front of me and just work my way up in sort of grudging, bitter silence, I suppose. And that's not as hardly as compelling as having a regularly weekly social thing to turn up to with a gang of mates who you otherwise wouldn't see for the rest of the week. So these places become venues. And I think if you're going to do it that way, then the actual game itself becomes so unimportant. I mean, you need interesting things to do, yes, but ultimately it is a place to sit there and do stuff with your friends. So the longevity extends greatly. Particularly, I think the weekly schedule helps a lot.
Yeah, I think so.
I think the not overdoing it. Yes, we certainly all dip in at other times during the week now and then. But for most of us, it's the 3 hours a week, and it'll take as long as it takes. And we've been going about a year now, haven't we?
Yeah, sort
of 10 months, something like that.
Very close to a year, I think. I have to look.
Yeah. I mean, and again, City of Heroes and Villains, again, it's a similar sort of thing. It's a regular little social group, and it's as much about the particular people as it is about the basic gameplay. And that will extend beyond. Like Bevis says there, I don't think I'd still be playing City of at the moment if it were just me in there soloing, because it's not that great a solo game, to be honest. So you do need a good gang of mates to hang out with to get the most out of it, I think. But then don't all MMOs? Is that perhaps not the point of them? They're venues as much as they are adventures. Let's see. Oh, new follower, Jal Suppo. I have only played one MMO, DDO, 1 year so far. Played single-player RPGs and RTS before. Yeah, so I've been going a year there. I mean, is that a fair assumption? I thought, I don't know, I don't know where I got this number from, but I sort of assume that 7 months, 7 to 5 months.
7 months is one that was definitely put around a couple of years ago.
As a sort of expected average MMO customer's lifespan
in
a particular game, but whether that's contracting now or not. But then, yes, so many other factors involved as well. He goes on to say, more generally, I'd say that at least 6 months of content at launch, assuming I play 8 hours play a week. Yeah, I think that's important. You've got to have lots to do. So many MMOs I've seen in the past have crumbled because everyone got to the end much quicker than the development team were expecting and suddenly found not a lot to do, and then they all wandered off. This is, you know, that is a very real danger. If you're going to release, make sure you've got lots to do all the way up, because people will get there within about a week. Yeah. Some of them, certainly the early pioneers, anyway. And if they're sitting around on their hands for months at a time, that could be months too long, I think. Let's see, we've got Dr. Torag. I've been playing City of Heroes for 4.5 years. I don't expect any other game to last anywhere near that long. Yeah, so clearly an example of a game for which that player has clicked and found a special fondness for. 4.5 years, blimey, I don't think I've been going for any game that long in a span. I think probably 2 years is my longest span, but I'd have to check, really. Let's see, what else we got? Oh, that's me. Geddens says, I bought Fallen Earth and ended up playing it for about 2 days. Already cancelled the subscription. Oh dear. So specific problems with Fallen Earth, perhaps, then. But so,
I've heard mixed things about that game.
Some people really, really like it and some don't. I think it is very much a Marmite MMO. You know, it's the love or hate thing, isn't it?
I don't mind Marmite. I don't love it, don't hate it.
Oh, you're always trouble, you are. But, yeah, I think people will either really love that one or not get it at all. Whereas sort of something with a bit more mainstream appeal, perhaps Aeon might evoke more a wider range of opinions. I don't know a lot about Fallen Earth. I have to do a bit more reading up, I think.
Yeah.
Let's see, we got Jackson92. If I like the MMO, I'd like to play it for its lifetime, but I'm a lifetime sub to Lotro, so I have incentive. He also writes for Middle Earth Adventurer, so I think there's a pretty strong loyalties there, but I mean, the lifetime sub, does that work for you?
Yeah, works very well.
Yeah, I mean, I just find something fundamentally distasteful about putting up $200 in one go for a game, even though rationally I know I might be playing it well beyond that. It's knowing that you're going to like it or not in the first place, that's the clue. I think that's why Champions Online got quite a bit of backlash when they were offering lifetime sub during their beta, when a lot of people hadn't even seen what the game was yet.
Yeah.
I think you need to try before you put down for that kind of commitment, certainly. Argoff31, I'll put in 3 or 4 months, then I'll take a break or try something new. Sometimes I come back, sometimes I don't. Yeah, so a more sort of widespread commuting buffet style of MMO life's not a bad thing, and perhaps more and more increasing these days. People will try a bit and then go and try a bit of something else and just work way around the different titles. Let's see, we've got Phoenix Defire. About 3 months to see if I'm hooked. I played MXO for all of 4 years, blimey. But I only managed SWG for 6 months. Blimey, Matrix Online for 4 years. It's very committed there.
The people who loved that game loved it.
Well, this is it. I mean, this is a very, very leading question. There's so many different factors involved. I mean, it's about personal preference for a particular title. You're going to stick with something you enjoy a long time. And also, yes, the people you're with as well. The sort of static groups, that kind of thing, the guilds. Let's see. Arbitrary Genius. I tend to either make 1 month or 2 years plus. Yeah. So again, it's the love or hate thing, isn't it? You either walk away or you stay forever. Let's see. Gothwalk says, it took me 8 months to hit level cap in DAOC, more than a year first time in WoW. Haven't completed, in quotes there, anything else. Yes, I know. I mean, the idea of completing an MMO just because you get to the top level is very debatable. But yeah, I mean, I tend to personally find not much incentive to start up again from fresh once I've maxed an MMO out in those rare times I do even do it at all. I mean, City of's a bit of an exception because you've got the whole other side of the game, which is more or less identical gameplay, but at least you've got different missions, different powers, different character, etc. So it's sort of effectively tax on the end. It's like getting to 50 and then being set to level 1 and given a whole different map to go up to 50 again with. So that's a bit of an exception, but I'm not sure I could be bothered to start a fresh level 1 in Lotro, though. You know, I think if I get, when we get there and when we finish it, I will just walk away and come back when they got more expansions.
Possibly.
Yeah, well, we'll see when we get there, won't we? Ridiculo? Depends, really. Years for Eve, months for Tale in the Desert, weeks for WoW, days for War, and about an hour for Free Realms. There we go. Good breakdown there. Max Castillo? I guess I'll find out when I do hit max level. Never actually made it there in any MMO. Yeah, is it that important to do so, though?
Not really.
As long as you're enjoying the journey. This is very much the problem, I think, with a lot of this mentality where it's, yes, first to 50, woohoo! Did you enjoy it, or was it like a bleeding eyeball, sleep-deprived, crazy run full of blurred-coloured shapes that you didn't really take in at all? The importance of being first. So, Mistaken there says, new MMO, I haven't finished the old one yet. And Askar, well, most MMOs I play for a month or two, then get bored, other than Guild Wars, which is now about 5 years, including Beta Time. Yeah, see, people will identify with a particular MMO and decide that that's going to be their online home, I think. And that's not the same for everyone, and it varies widely. Let's see, Enlightened One, I continue playing as long as friends are playing and the dev team is active. Ah, interesting. Maintenance only devs makes games boring. Yeah. I mean, that's something I find particularly with the 3 month rule. You know, well, not specifically 3 months in this case, but when I come back to an MMO like a year in, or I'm the first, you know, I discover a thing for the first time after everyone else has gotten bored, including the dev team. You know, that makes for quite bland MMOs where everything's static. I think one of the main selling points of an MMO is that the world is changing. Yes, not in a major way. That yes, I've completed this quest. Everything is different now. But you're getting expansions. You're getting content updates. You're getting bug fixes. You know, I mean, there's a sense that the game is alive. It's not just a thing that you interact with. It's a place you can be and a project that's ongoing, which I think differentiates them from a lot of single player gaming. And that's part of, I think, why we pay our monthly money for it all. Let's see, Blue K, MMOs that I play just to check out, no expectation. Yeah, MMOs I've been looking forward to, I expect to play for years. Ah, interesting angle, the expectations. I mean, the hype cycle, how if we're driven to a frenzy that this next MMO is going to be the best thing ever and the only thing we'll ever need, then when it turns out not to be so, we get to be quite disappointed, I find. But the expectation versus, yeah, exactly, just rolling up to an MMO you'd only have barely heard of with no expectation at all and being surprised and pleased that it's actually really good. That can mean that the time you do spend there is time that you weren't expecting to spend there in the first place. So, yeah, increases the appeal, I think. Wolven Spectre, never played an MMO that had a level cap that I would be able to grind to it and still enjoy the game. No problem in Eve, no cap. Yeah, so very much the expectation of what the game places in front of you. If you've got this big 0 to 60 or 50 or whatever it happens to be in your locale, if you've got this big level ascent put in front of you, you're going to get on with it and expect that that will be the measure of how long you're going to spend in the game. I mean, particularly if you're not overly into the raid culture at the far end of these things, it will be very much, here I am, here is 60, when I get there I am done, you know. And you can judge your rate of progress against that. But if you're not really digging the actual business of moving up the levels, then what's the point in getting to the end? Is the destination going to be any different? Rarely is. See, you've got Sil UK there. Lifetime, as long as game is on... is online, yeah. Eve player myself, he says. I don't think I play one with level caps. Yeah, so getting a lot of Eve players with completely different interpretation of it all, really. Many of them who haven't played Warcraft, etc.
Or even if they have, Eve's such a unique experience for the way it all works, and where levels are meaningless.
The level training, yeah, exactly.
Even the number of skill points you have is meaningless.
Your skill points won't define how long you're going to be there. I mean, you're not there and you're still training them.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you have to find your own sort of incentives and your own motivations, and those will define how long you expect to be playing the thing for.
Yeah.
Let's see, we've got there. MJ Ukis, however long they give me as a come back and play X deal. Yeah. So cheap seats gaming at its finest there. Excellent. I still might try out Wrath of the Lich King for 7 days, if only to play a Death Knight. Yeah. So, you know, when the freebies are offered, when the comeback trail's offered, that if you've got no expectation of staying beyond it, then you know how long you're going to be playing it. 14 yeah. days or whatever. Let's see. Kuznik 2000. DDO, 3 years and counting. Lotro, 6 months. Eve, 2 days. Oh, well. New player to Eve there, then. Do help him out and don't blow him up.
He may have only lasted 2 days.
Until the first pod killing. Mm. When they say this next system is 0.4 or lower, they mean it. Don't just click yes and go on through.
Well, Eve's a strange one. You do get, it seems to either be 5 years or 2 days.
Yeah, well,
the time people
it is
played.
Very much. I think this is very much down to, does a game click? You know, you will know or you won't within 2 days. That's why the cheap seats thing's not necessarily quite the stupid idea, it seems. 14 days is easily long enough to know if you're going to like it or not. The rest is just specifics and finding out details, I think.
Yeah.
Ackley says, I've been in EQ2 for almost 5 years, rather. I've only one max level character. Surprisingly, I'm a Bartle S-E-K-A. That's Socializer, Explorer, Killer, Achiever, in that order. So he's just basically in there gadding about at the crossroads and chatting to people. Well, no wonder he's only got one max level character in 5 years. Clearly enjoys his time there, though. Let's see. Elsith. Depends on the type. Most PvP games focus on the end game content, so you need to get there quicker than PvE games. Interesting angle, yes. PvP, if this game is PvP centric and designed in the old style, it's basically just wasting time and prep getting through all the levels.
Yeah.
If you're there to do the PvP, you need obviously need to be the maximum level allowable, because then no one can get the drop on you level wise. So the leveling becomes a bit of a chore, and yeah. But then once you're at the PvP, that becomes a very variable duration thing as well. I mean, I play Planetside on and off, and I can't do more than like 3 or 4 weeks at it at a time. Because although I do suck, I do get better during that time. But it's more about the overall battles are pretty similar over and over and over. And yeah, the moment-to-moment fighting is fun, and I think probably Warhammer probably suffers a bit from this as well. The moment-to-moment can be fun, but do you want to be doing those same fights every night for the next 2.5 years, 5 years? At some point, you're going to have had enough and want to walk away, and that's not necessarily the game has failed you. That's quite a natural thing, I think. I think PvP, particularly territorial, back-and-forth PvP, it can only remain interesting for so long. Oh, it goes on to say, as for how long, 3 years in a PvP MMO if it's fun, and about 2 years in a PvE MMO if they add enough content. Yeah, so two very different criteria determining the lifespan there, I think. Or the PvP and the PvE, they both have different demands and different needs. I think that's it, really. Excellent.
Yes.
Thank you, everyone. So, how long is your longest subscription there, John? And we're not counting Eve, because you don't play it for years at a time.
Probably Lotro, actually.
Yeah?
Because it's a lifetime.
Yeah, I suppose.
So you can't really count that.
You'll be subbed to that until you die, technically. But
Other than that, I would say it was probably Galaxies.
Yeah, well, a good year or two in there. I think I can't remember now what the specific title was, but I rarely last more than 2 years in a particular title. I think probably Guild Wars is my longest, but again, lifetime sub, effectively, once you bought the boxes. But I have been actively playing Guild Wars for at least 2-3 years, so I think it's possibly my longest. So, yeah. All right, thanks, everyone. Okay, and what did you learn this week?
I learned that we have way more Australian listeners than I expected.
Yeah, you've done your weird thing that tells us where everyone lives now, haven't you?
Oh, and if you're a listener in Saudi Arabia...
Hello.
Hi.
Big shout out to our Saudi Arabian massive.
We have won, and yes, hi.
And I have learned that the cake is still a lie. See you next time.
Goodbye.